Welcome to Sustainability That Pays, Building Resilient and Competitive Businesses. I'm really excited for this conversation and the folks we've put together on this panel here. And you know, the central theme that I really want to get around is this myth that sustainability is expensive. And it certainly can be expensive if you want it to be expensive. But all in all, sustainability is often just good business. So I'm going to go ahead and introduce our panelists here and get us going. My intention is for us to have a conversation for about like 45 minutes to an hour, because I'm going to leave a healthy amount of time for questions. So as we go through conversations, just be thinking about how you might want to interact with the brilliant minds we have up here, because I do want to definitely give some healthy room for dialogue. So to introduce our panelists, first up, we have Megan Nick, who's the Senior Sustainability Analyst for Summit County. She works to advance climate action and green business initiatives across Summit County. She's also a former Olympic freestyle aerial skier and a 22 bronze medalist, and holds, we always got to make it a little bit about the Olympics, and also holds a master's degree in environmental policy and management. Kim Grob is a co-founder of Right On, which is a sustainability content strategy agency whose clients include Adobe, Salesforce, and Tillamook. She's a strategist and storyteller committed to making sustainability communication a driver of real behavioral change. And Brad Stevenson is the founder of Premiums for the Planet Movement and a sustainability strategist with experience ranging from Fortune 20 companies to nonprofits. He spent over 25 years helping organizations develop purpose-driven strategies, including co-creating 1% for the Planet personal checking accounts. So, welcome. So let's set the scene, right, as a group, and talk about why sustainability is good business. I think many of us come from a business culture where we treat sustainability either like a sacrifice that a business is trying to make or like a pure PR strategy. But it can also, like I said, just be good business. So starting with Megan, when businesses first come to the Green Business Program with Summit County, what do they expect versus what actually happens?
I'll quickly introduce the Green Business Program for those in the room who have never heard of it. So Summit County and Park City have a Green Business Program. It was founded in 2016 by a local nonprofit called Recycle Utah. A few years ago, it came together with the Park City Chamber, the Community Foundation, the city and the county, recognizing that there were so many good initiatives happening around sustainability with businesses, but they were a little fragmented, and we really wanted to consolidate it into one program and one website where a business could go and get all the information they needed happening related to sustainability in our community. And I think there have been a few misconceptions about the program, whether that's, it's just a recycling program. Maybe that comes from because it's titled Green Business Program, or on the flip side, that this free certification program is actually going to cost you a lot of money as a business. And while we do support waste diversion and recycling, and also some of our actions may require an upfront cost for the business, there's a much bigger picture to that. And so I like to think of the Green Business Program as an education and awareness first approach. And so what we are trying to do is help businesses understand the benefits and the opportunities with taking sustainable action. And so also on top of that, connecting them to the right resources and incentives and programs available that already exist in our community. And so two examples that come to mind is the Rocky Mountain Power WattSmart program, which offers no cost services for all their commercial customers. And so really trying to connect businesses to that. And then also just thinking about, you know, on the materials and waste side, how can we implement, you know, procurement policy that's going to support cost reduction and waste reduction. So a quick example of that is a bulk purchasing policy, or also working with your vendors to reduce the waste. And so that's kind of a snapshot of our Green Business Program.
Thanks, Megan. And so Kim, what Megan's describing is some of the kind of operational shifts and changes that businesses can make to both increase their sustainability impact, but also potentially save money. I'm curious, how are businesses communicating some of those operational changes once they've started to implement them?
So I think once the changes have started to be made, there's a lot of enthusiasm to want to communicate and start talking about it. A pitfall, though, is that businesses haven't really thought deeply about their audience. Who are you talking to? Who are you communicating to? And you probably have different segments that you're communicating to. So what does each of those audiences care about the most? What are their fears? What are their hopes? What do they think about what you're doing now? And what do you want them to think about that? And then what are the details you're going to use to get them to think that? So once you have that foundation of your audience, and by the way, you can't have that making assumptions as an internal team or asking your leaders. You actually need to do research. So you need to do some surveys. You need to do some focus groups. You need to talk one-on-one to people. Once you have those real insights, then it's time to start telling the story. If you don't have those insights, then you can fall into a trap with your messaging. And if you think about sustainability, there's like two, from a wide perspective, two different ways you could go. You could have a morality message, you know, this is a good for the planet, ethical thing to do. And then on the other side, you might have the good for business message, which is really the material issues. A group that I like a lot called Potential Energy Coalition, they do really amazing messaging research, and they tested these two messages. They tested the material issues message versus the morality message to investor and customer audiences. And, you know, for the material, for the morality message, it was, you know, messages about this is good for the planet, this is good for, you know, the environment, we're saving the world. On the material side, it was about mitigating wildfire risk, it was about making responsible business decisions and about protecting shareholders and customers. So which of the two do you think did better versus like the material or the morality message? The material did better. The morality message actually performed well, but the material message increased that performance and gave it a huge lift among people who would be more skeptical of the morality message.
Now, over to Brad. You know, most people treat insurance as just an administrative line item for businesses. It's all something that has to be purchased for businesses. And so how do you see that connecting to sustainability? Am I passing the loud mic all the way over?
Let's see. Okay. How is that?
Yeah.
Okay. Before I put you all to sleep, I've been taking some notes. And apparently, it's important if we know who's in the audience. So could I see a show of hands, who here might be in finance in some capacity? Great. Operations? Excellent. Human resources? Marketing? Okay. So it's pretty difficult, because you have Megan talking about something really cool in the Green Biz program, and Kim is talking about storytelling, which is super fascinating and rivets all of us. And then I'm going to talk to you about insurance. So it's not really fair. I'm just asking to give me a chance. The first thing I want to talk a little bit about is, well, why insurance matters. So could you raise your hand if your organization spends money on insurance? All of us, right? Everybody. And any sense around how much money we spend collectively on insurance, not just in this room, but around the globe? $7 trillion a year. Insurance and insurance companies are the second largest money managers on the planet. So they fund more things than any other industry beside banks. But their decisions about what they will or won't insure and how they ensure those things affects all of us. It makes things either investable or not investable. It either allows you to operate or not. It's what determines whether or not you can get a home loan or drive a car. It's why we have global shipping, because we can cover the risk of cargo on a boat. So it actually is the critical foundation. It's the backbone of all of our economies and our communities. And how does it connect with sustainability? Sustainability, business continuity, risk, sound familiar? Transitive property of equality, if I remember math. Those are very similar things. So when we don't have sustainability, we increase risk. Whether we're talking about clean air and clean water that relates to health and health risk, and therefore the cost or availability of health insurance, or whether we're talking about catastrophic weather events, which, for example, $62 billion in the first half of 2024, as compared to a 10-year average before that of $38 billion in catastrophic losses. So whether that's hail or hurricane or wildfire, there's a dramatic relationship, because sustainability is a driver of risk. And insurance, while it is really, really, really boring, and I apologize, it actually matters a lot. And right now it's broken. And we're getting a wake-up call. It's broken in that insurability is going down. The cost of insurance is going up. Insurance companies are leaving markets, especially our mountain town markets. And without insurance, you don't have home loans, and banks default because the value of the things they lent against go down, and it creates a terrible vicious cycle. The second thing we're seeing is a change in the risk context. So the insurance industry, the status quo, is very broken right now, because insurance isn't where we need it. It's leaving when we need it most. And it's not funding any of the things that we need in our community to drive resilience and health. And ultimately, we need to fix it. And there is a way we can do that coming together, but I wanted to set the stage for why insurance matters, how it relates to sustainability, and why it's broken right now. It's broken because it's not funding the things that support the reduction of risk or the health of our communities, and it's not there when we need it. It's leaving.
So we've had seemingly three very different kind of intros to understanding this topic. So Brad's talking about risk for businesses. Kim's talking about business reputation when it comes to talking about sustainability work. And Megan's focusing on operations. But I'm curious to hear from you guys on how you see these things intersecting. Where are you seeing convergence amongst you three? And whoever wants to take it.
I see it all converging in the fact that there are hidden costs and huge risks to not considering sustainability for your business and as part of your business model.
So, I think from a communications perspective, the very best storytelling and marketing comes when the communications professionals are brought in early. So that means talking with operations, that means talking with sustainability strategists, that means bringing in legal. So I think that it's just super important for all of this work to be done together and to inform the content strategy and the stories that we're going to tell. Otherwise, we're not getting the messages from operations like, you know, you should be one of our stakeholders. We should be talking to you before we communicate anything. We should definitely be talking about risk. We should be talking with the legal team, and then we should start communicating.
It's really hard to go third. I feel like we're three different ingredients of a critical whole. Megan, in organizing and bringing together businesses and helping galvanize and build buying power and to organize impact, where collective action and coordination is such a critical part of any solution in the current moment, where the issues we're facing are so complex, it takes a village coming together to solve them and to act in a coordinated fashion. And without storytelling and the ability to message that and educate and create awareness, and frankly, maybe even more important than awareness is inspiration and enthusiasm, there is no action, because it all is about the dopamine, right, if we're honest? And then figuring out where to act, what are the key levers, what are the most important things that we focus on in what priority order, building platforms for the economic supply chain, the financial supply chain, the things like banking and insurance and investing that are boring, admittedly, but they literally are the drivers, the apex directors of our market economy. And so I think the three of us together come to you to say, we need to work together. We need to inspire others to come with us. And there's some critical things we can do that underpin the rest of what we have to do.
So now that we've kind of set this ecosystem up for you guys, I want to bring us through kind of the short, medium, and long-term things that businesses should be thinking about when we're thinking about sustainability and making sure that it is serving our businesses well. And so starting with short-term wins, let's say you are a business owner that's in this room and you're interested in sustainability, but you're also busy. You don't have a dedicated sustainability person. You are worried about your bottom line. I want to talk through like what you should be thinking about if you're someone that might have interest but limited time and resources. And so starting with Megan, I would love for you to walk us through just that early certification process with the Green Business Program. And share really where businesses typically are finding savings that they weren't expecting.
So as a business, you create a profile on our website, parkcitygreen.org. There are over 150 to 200 different actions you can take across our five categories. That's kind of how we organize each action. So energy, water, materials and waste, transportation, and thriving community and equity. And among those 200 actions, depending on your business type, the scale of your operations, how many employees you have, it'll look different how your certification goes. But what's most important, well, what I find most unique and important about our program is we're always connecting it back to the community and the existing work happening. So whether that's encouraging businesses to get a Summit Bike Share station, maybe it's getting the best place for working parents designation that the chamber is really driving right now, or maybe it's connecting with Wasteless Solutions for food rescue. There's that community component, but then also in terms of the savings side, connecting it to our utility programs. So I mentioned earlier Rocky Mountain Power's WattSmart program. We always encourage a business, if they own their building, we want to connect them to these demand side management programs. So you can get energy benchmarking, which means these energy consultants contracted through Rocky Mountain Power are going to look at your historical usage, energy usage, and then also do a building walkthrough with you. And those are some easy cost savings that will come from doing the, going through those processes. So two examples I have is the Basin Rec Fieldhouse in 2024 did one of these, and they found that just by updating their software systems and making some small tweaks to their building automation system, they could save over $1,900 annually on their electricity bills. The Swanner Eco Center had a similar finding of just by decreasing their boiler set point, they could save $1,000 annually. And while that might not sound like a lot of money to some here, one of the number one things I hear from businesses is that every dollar matters for them. And so where the Green Business Program can come in is really finding those dollars. Where are you, maybe where are some gaps in your operations where you could be saving more? And then also having that sustainability benefit. And then on the materials and waste side, a very recent example is we are onboarding a local lodging company. And one of our first conversations we had is whether they considered doing refillables in each of their units for their toiletries. And a few weeks went by, they came back and said, first they got it approved to make the switch from their leadership, but also it was gonna result in a 50% cost reduction in those toiletry materials, which is not nothing, that is huge. And so that's what we really wanna see through the Green Business Program. And then with the community benefit, that's less single-use plastics going to the landfill. And so I think where Kim and I can connect is that the Green Business Program wants to make sure that any certified green business is doing what they say they're doing, and then where can we help share that back with the community?
And so Kim, when it comes to telling a sustainability story for a business that might be newer on this journey of really thinking about sustainability, I'm curious, you know, what kind of story should businesses be thinking about when they're early in their journey, and what do customers and stakeholders really respond to in those early stages?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'll tell the story of Tillamook. They're the cheese company. You've had their ice cream, probably. And we've been working with them since they started externally talking about sustainability, which was about 8 years ago. The first year, and they've been great stewards for their entire company history, but by the time they actually had their sustainability strategy ready and were ready to start talking about it, that's when we got involved. The very first year that we worked with them, all we worked on was their six commitments. So they have six commitments that they have put out as to what they are going to do to be good stewards. And we helped them get those commitments written in human, simple language, take what was very complicated and turn it into something simple and human that they could work with. That's all we did that first year. The next year, when we, you know, started working through year two, we were ready to actually create a report, which was one of their first foundational pieces, and start to tell that story. You know, to answer your question about what people respond to, they have done a really good job of being very honest and transparent, which in corporate sustainability is a bit rare sometimes. A lot of times it can be very chronically optimistic. And so they, you know, they have challenges that they're working through. One of the biggest ones being that they're a dairy company, and cows fart and burp and cause a lot of greenhouse gases. So how are we going to tell that story honestly and authentically and not push it under, you know, the rug? So they've done a great job with that kind of transparency, and that's been really important every year as they've continued telling this story. It's been a story about progress, not a story of perfection. So I think that's a good message to take away. Also, to start really slow. You don't have to have a huge communications plan when you're first starting out. Just start to figure out what are the core messages that you want people to understand about what you do. Can you tell them in a way that's honest and that talks about your failures just as much as it talks about your successes? And of course, can you tell stories? Tillamook does a great job of like talking about this through the lens of their farmers. So make sure you have the right messengers. Like, it's not always the CEO or the leader who needs to tell the story. Often it's an employee or a partner you have who, or somebody who's benefited from your work, who's going to really change the way people think and feel about what you do.
And Brad, for businesses that are just starting to think about risk and resilience and how insurance might play into that, I'm curious if you can share, you know, what does it actually involve to be thinking about where your insurance dollars are going? And what are those early stages look like for a business who might be thinking about considering how they're spending their insurance money?
I know you just asked me a question about insurance, but I'm still thinking about cow belching.
Aren't we all?
Okay. So coming back to the problem, right now the problem is that all of the money that we spend on insurance leaves our community, and the way we buy insurance is completely fragmented, uncoordinated, non-strategic. It lacks any power or leverage. And so what Premiums for the Planet is doing to try to solve that, working with organizations like the Park City Chamber, the Park City Community Foundation, is to organize that insurance spend in a way that we can start to have collective power, we can aggregate that influence and take all of that right now, I'd say latent dollar voting power, and turn it into actual dollar influence, both in terms of the costs of the insurance that we can reduce if we act together, as well as how we direct it and where we align it, as well as trying to ultimately create programs that are directing some of that investment and the millions of dollars that we're spending collectively on insurance back into the community to fund the things that matter in terms of resilience. So from a what are we doing now perspective, we work with organizations like the Chamber and the Community Foundation. We also have members like Burton and Outside Inc. and Cotopaxi Foundation, which is local here, and Ski Taos. We are a B Corp, and I bring that up because I don't. Who here is familiar with what a B Corp is? A certified B corporation. Okay, few. B Corps are kind of somewhere in between a nonprofit and a for-profit. They're businesses that lead with a mission, but that are technically for-profit, and they operate, their slogan is use business as a force for good. So the idea is, in whatever you're doing, find a way to direct resources back to the things that matter for the communities that serve you and that you serve. And so on day one, it's being the only B Corp insurance brokerage in the commercial B Corp insurance brokerage in the United States that lets us allocate resources that flow through us to things that matter for the folks that are part of the community. In the midterm, as we aggregate our collective buying power, it creates tremendous opportunities that we don't currently have, hopefully averting the insurance crisis that we're already feeling, as we see, you know, 164% increase in insurance costs for ski areas, for example, over the last 10 years. So to take control of insurance again, to keep costs affordable and retain access, that's the mid-run, and the long-term, it's to build our own community insurance programs so that the money we're spending on insurance stays in the community, comes back and benefits the folks who live and work, the businesses here, so.
Yeah, and Brad, you're really leaning on this idea of kind of collective purchasing of insurance premium as a lever for driving more resilience and benefiting the community. I'm curious how Megan and Kim might see this idea of kind of collective buying and collective purchasing as furthering either operations or reputation.
Yeah, I'll say on a much smaller scale than what Brad's talking about is the Green Business Program striving to have more of the peer-to-peer business learning where we see that can really drive progress at the local level. And so two examples is our Lunch and Learns in our newsletter and having that education piece that can really drive that collective action. So for our Lunch and Learns, we host these quarterly and we try to have a local expert come present, but then also have a business that has gone through the process or the topic at hand. So last May we had Rocky Mountain Power's WattSmart program come in and help businesses just learn how to read their utility bill because most businesses don't even consider looking at the utility bills and all those line items. And then how their efficiency programs can help you save money and where you'll see that on your bill. And then we had the business that's gone through this process come in and talk about the successes and challenges that they have found. And so I think that's really important of driving collective action is that peer-to-peer learning and the program facilitating that.
And I'll just add that is part of your communications plan. That is part of the story you're telling. So it's important to think about communications in a broader way than maybe like, you know, I put out a report every year.
Yeah, and thinking down the road, so now a business has taken some of the low-hanging fruit. They're considering sustainability in the work that they're doing. And it's been a couple years into the sustainability journey, so we're thinking midterm now. You know, I feel like a lot of businesses get some early wins and then sometimes can lose momentum when it comes to investing in sustainability. So I want to talk about, you know, what separates the ones that take those early wins and just kind of stagnate and the ones that use that to build momentum and keep going. And so starting with Megan, I'm curious what you've seen with the Green Business Program about what the difference is between those businesses that can galvanize on those early wins into lasting change versus the ones that end up just kind of stalling out roughly where they started.
Yeah, I think one of the best indicators of success that we have seen is the business taking it a step further by implementing policies and then continuing staff education programs and training programs, which is something we offer through the Green Business Program. With Recycle Utah, we offer waste reduction and recycling training programs for your staff, whether that's at the leadership level or we just did a housekeeping one, really having that ongoing education and awareness, because also I feel like information is changing every day about sustainability. So the Green Business Program is trying to keep our finger on the pulse and making sure that we're communicating the correct information and getting that out to all our businesses. And so I say that it's one of the indicators of success, because regardless of staff turnover or leadership change, if you have those policies in place, if you have that ongoing education, that's going to help you really integrate sustainability across all your operations, all your divisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Kim, you mentioned a second ago that your sustainability communication strategy is not your annual report. So I'm curious, what does a mature communication strategy around sustainability look like for a business that's been at it for a few years?
Well, we talked about, well, let's just start with a story. A friend of mine who is a sustainability director for a multinational company recently told me that his sustainability report got 33 downloads. And so that just tells you something about like the reach that your report might have, especially if it's a more technical report. It may not solve the problems that you think it's going to solve for you. It's foundational for a lot of businesses, and it's an important piece of content that you need to create. And we believe that it shouldn't just be a checkbox, but it should actually be a foundational core piece of content that tells stories, that helps change behavior. But even if you have a great sustainability report like the one Tillamook puts out that's interactive and reaches their consumer audience as well as their analyst audience, it's only the beginning of the story. You need to have a steady drumbeat of content throughout the year that brings that story to your various audiences, like we were talking about, to the messages that they care about on the formats that they will pay attention to, and on the channels and places where they go. So that's going to be social content. That's going to be maybe some thought leadership pieces that you're putting out. It could be infographics. It could be presentations that you're bringing to various audiences. But you need a plan, and it needs to be a plan that continues throughout the year. The good news is, I mean, that sounds expensive, especially for a smaller business. But the good news is you have collected a lot of this information through creating a report. And then that information can be repurposed into smaller bits of content that you can use throughout the year. And the bonus is it's already approved by your leadership and the legal team. So you can just like take these little bits, create a profile that maybe has a photo and a caption of somebody, an employee on your team who's done something really great. Or maybe it's a stat, a really good stat of some success you've had that you pull out as an info bit that you can just share in a presentation or put on social. Or you take some key facts and figures and make a great infographic, create a video from a story you learned. There's so many opportunities to repurpose the content you've created for your bigger piece of content. And that really does make the difference between something that a few people are going to see once a year and that you've invested a lot of time and money into versus something that you can get to all of your audiences throughout the year so that they start to know who you are, know what you stand for, and trust you.
And Kim, I feel like something you're touching on is this idea of really weaving in sustainability as part of your brand and reputation and having that through line in communications. And I think often, especially for businesses that might be earlier in thinking about sustainability and how to talk about it, something they can often wonder is, okay, will this actually translate to sales? Will this actually translate to more customers? What is this going to look like for my bottom line? And I want to send it over to Megan, because I know through the Green Business Program, there was a business that essentially there's a little story around this, right? So I'll let you take the honors.
Yeah, and this kind of builds on an earlier point Kim was talking about behind greenwashing and making sure that you're communicating your sustainability commitments correctly. And so we had a local catering company. It was actually the first business that got recertified in our program. And they reached out because they had a client asking for proof of their sustainability commitments and their certifications, and they didn't have any. And so they were seeking out the Green Business Program certification to really prove that. And I think that, yeah, it was a nice positive reflection on our program, because what we've tried to do over the last few years with this Green Business Program and the website is really making sure we're holding businesses accountable and being transparent about what they're doing and what it means to be a green business here in Summit County and Park City. And I think just to note on that too is this example also highlights that consumers are using their purchasing power to demand better for companies. And so it's really important that you're communicating accurately and being informative.
Yeah, I know that we were all a little pleased whenever that story came out as part of the Green Business team, because it is just really cool when someone asks for a thing that you're passionate about. And again, really just kind of shows that there is a consumer demand for sustainability in all kinds of businesses. And so, Brad, thinking about this kind of medium-term space for businesses that have decided, okay, I'm going to think about my collective purchasing power when it comes to regular business expenses like insurance. In that mid-year range, you know, what should they be thinking about beyond just, okay, I've bought into this program? How else can they really be thinking about what they're doing when it comes to spending their dollars?
Sure, thanks. So first I want to build on what Megan and Kim said around the value businesses have, especially from the perspective of caring about what your customers care about, right? And that there's tremendous value from a marketplace perspective, also, as we said, from a buying power perspective, but a lot of organizations, there are light lifts and there are heavy lifts when it comes to the different things that you can do. And thinking about like being a part of the Green Business Program, light lift, high return on investment, and ability to save money in many different places. And I think there, when you look at your business, there are probably a lot of those kinds of small areas, like small things to look at. Where are you spending money? Where could you, you know, be a part of something bigger? One of the positive things about insurance is that you're already all spending the money on it. And it's a reoccurring annual expense. It's actually typically the third largest expense that a business has. And so our focus with that is to really take something that you're already doing, allow you like to join into the movement that we're building. It costs nothing. It doesn't take extra effort. And it just uses the money that you're already spending. And so that money builds up year after year after year. As we organize communities, the total scale of it expands so that the leverage and the potential of the program expands. So that's midterm. I would say it's this annuity thing that just keeps recurring and can really grow in our favor if we start doing it in a coordinated, strategic, collective way. I think that's probably the critical part. I guess the other thing is we recognize the value for businesses to get recognized for things that they're doing that are maybe less interesting on the surface, but that are equally important. And so, for example, the program that we've built, it's to bring visibility to organizations that participate, like a green business program would, so that something that's actually critically important, although it's lethally non-interesting, becomes part of a broader asset and a sustainability portfolio that you can communicate.
We can make it interesting.
Yeah, and I actually want to keep it with you, Brad. I want to switch up the order a little bit on you guys. As we shift to this idea of long-term resilience, so we all live and work in communities that are probably going to be pretty different in 10 to 20 years when it comes to the environment that we are living and working in. And that's everything from climate shifts to political environment. And I would love, Brad, for you to talk a little bit more about that long-term vision of making sure that your business as usual dollars are going to protecting the long-term resilience of your business, and how exposed are businesses that haven't really thought about adjusting their risk profile, and what's that going to look like on this kind of a larger scale timeline?
So I know we only have a handful of operations and finance folks in the room, but from a pure risk and resilience perspective, this is the changes that are happening that caused that $62 billion of loss in the first half of 2024, those things keep happening. And I think we can't ignore the economic reality that the climate risk, which is occurring day to day, we experience it in our kinds of communities, I think more than a lot of places, where we see the shortening ski season, the drier winter that leads to the drier summer that now we're all trying to figure out how do we harden our homes and things like that. There's a real resilience need in communities and businesses. I always look at the businesses as the pillars of the community. You're the social convening place. You're the economic hub. You're the thought leadership in many cases. You're the one-to-many place of capacity to drive awareness and information. And so I feel like we are the answer to this. And part of that answer is the pure resilience, to start to look at the implications of the changing risk context. And sustainability means business continuity, means finding ways to harden the things of your business, whether that are things like supply chain disruptions, or your physical facility, or the health of employees as hot days increase, and we have more and more days, over 100 degrees. So those range of things. And I guess the corollary to that is coming together with risk and insurance being completely tied together. Where by taking action in resilience, by coming together with insurance, we can actually solve two problems and create a common language and a common platform to address both of those things, ideally creating a funding vehicle that is the least possible pain for all of us by just taking what we spend and directing it more strategically.
Yeah, and Megan, I know a lot of the work that you do at Summit County is thinking about this idea of climate resilience, adaptation, and in particular when it comes to things like wildfire, drought, some of these shifts that we know are coming and are really already happening. I'm curious, what does a forward-looking business that's being really thoughtful about resilience as things shift, what are they doing differently?
I think it starts with looking at the risks and opportunities that will come as our local environment continues to change. It's already changing, but as it continues to change, and really honing in on what you can do to minimize those risks. And the Green Business Program's continuing to evolve in how we support businesses looking at that. But a few examples is maybe you identify one of your most water-intensive processes or systems you have across your operations, and looking at how you can reduce that, maybe increase water efficiency. So in the future, with drought, you know, you minimize your disruption, but you also reduce the costs that you're going to have to pay through your water bills. Maybe it looks like you're a landscaping business and you want to access the USU Extension resources to train your employees on WaterWise and local scaping techniques. So when inevitably maybe some local policy changes happen, or, you know, you have more clients coming into you requesting that type because they want to save water, your business is prepared to do that because you've done the training up front. On the wildfire front, something that we've had more discussions about is how we can help businesses create a smoke readiness plan because, you know, Kim touched on, or Brad touched on, you know, heat and outdoor employees, but there's also risk to working indoors, especially during our wildfire smoke events. And how can we keep our indoor air quality safe? Well, if you even if you just have a small office, is that purchasing an air filter to make sure that your employees are safe? You know, you continue to have productive employees, but you also retain those employees because they see that you're there to help them adapt to this changing environment that we're experiencing locally.
And so, Kim, Brad and Megan are really touching on this idea of future-proofing your business, either through investing in resilience or thinking about some operational changes to just make you a little bit more adaptable to our changing climate. But all of this really just depends on internal buy-in. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious, how do you make the case to invest in this idea of long-term resilience to your business leaders, your decision makers, the CFO, the CEO? How do you get that buy-in?
That's a great question. Just like we were talking about with your external audience, your external audience. Your audience here is, you know, your leaders, and you need to understand it from their point of view and understand this audience first and foremost. So think about it. What are their priorities? Not what are your priorities, but what are their priorities? An example I have is some work we did for the Commonwealth Fund. They're a health equity foundation, and we helped them create a guide for chief sustainability officers to talk to leaders in health systems about their work and get buy-in for it. And to do that, we did a lot of research into the various audiences who the sustainability officers would be talking to. And we looked at what the CFOs wanted to hear, what the COOs wanted to hear. And those were a lot about cost and efficiency. But we also interviewed and did research into what the chief medical officers and chief nursing officers would want to hear. And that was really different. That was about patient outcomes and patient safety, and it was more mission driven. So one side needs more of operation and finance driven message. Another side needs to have a mission driven message. So you really need to know who you're talking to, what their priorities are. And also you need to think about, like, are you the right person to talk with them about it? It's possible that what you're really looking for is maybe there's somebody on the board who is close to the CEO and they believe in what you're doing. That person is going to be maybe a better first touch than you are to tell the story. So think about, like, who has the ear of your leaders and how do you equip them with the right messages to make your case.
Great. Well, I have some lightning round questions prepared just in case, and I don't need them. So that's pretty cool. So we have a little over 15 minutes. I'd love to open it up for Q&A. And I don't think I have a runner for mics, so I am the runner for mics. If anybody has any questions, thoughts?
Thank you, everybody, for your thoughts. Just a quick question. What role do you see legislature playing, especially at a local and state level, in incentivizing more sustainable business practices?
I'll start. Last fall, I don't know if any of you are aware of this of this event, but I went to an event that was put on by John Curtis, the senator, called the Conservative Climate Summit, and it brought together a lot of organizations within the state and within the region to talk about climate from a more conservative point of view. It was standing room only. It was packed. It was full of people who wanted to talk about this. And so I think one part of the role is to have our conservative legislators find their place at this table, which has often been a more progressive conversation. So how do we bring conservative leaders into this? And I think John Curtis is a great example of how we can start to do that.
Yeah, I'll speak from, you know, the county and city and then the Green Business Program as this up-and-coming resource that we've continued to scale. I'd say that has been a great example of how our city and county leadership have shown that they want to support businesses because it is difficult. A lot of our businesses are small. They don't have a sustainability person on staff to really drive that. And so we need to play a role in being a resource and supporting that and accelerating that progress, because the county and city also have our own climate change, climate action and sustainability emission reduction goals. And we can't achieve that without the business community. And so I think the Green Business Program is one example of a way for us to really drive that progress with our businesses.
Thanks. That's a great question. We look at the world maybe a little differently. If I go 50,000 foot level, we say, okay, you want change, there's advocacy, there's regulatory shift, and there's the market. And I look at it almost as a sequence. If you want regulatory change, the best way to do it is to mobilize a big market that votes with their dollars, that supports the political will to get across whatever the regulation might be. So I think the regulatory piece of this is important, and also the dollar voting potential and the market mobilization potential, I think, really can be a tailwind for that.
I'm coming at you. Any chance you guys can help me pass that down? Thank
you. I have two questions for you guys and gals. First one is easy. Where do carbon credits come into this picture here? We have the green businesses, we have the conservative, and where do carbon credits come in? They're very unpopular in the United States. They're very popular in Europe, Canada.
Definitely a challenging topic, but something that all of the stakeholders within the Green Business Program continue to discuss, and we do see that as a potential future resource and something that we want to dive deeper into, because we do already have businesses asking about that. And then also with other, you know, large events like the Olympics, there is a lot of talk around carbon credits, where we want to make sure, you know, our role is that we're communicating what a carbon credit is, what the impact that can have correctly, rather than, you know, pushing that as a solution. That's part of the conversation, but it's not the entire conversation. And the role I see as the Green Business Program is that we're just communicating exactly what that is and what that means correctly.
I just add 2 points. I think there's an interesting possible intersection where carbon credits also are resilience work, where the projects that deliver carbon credits are also things like reef restorations or planting things like kelp, things that end up also reducing the risk or mitigating the damage from natural events, to me is an even more interesting place to play than the pure kind of financial instrument of it. And the second is just remarkably, there's actually an insurance industry and a way to insure carbon credits. So,
the other question is, I heard Kim bring up John Curtis about the conservative side of this. While we had a terrible winter here and the sky is falling, other parts of the country, Minnesota and the Northeast, had not record snowfalls, but they had plenty of snowfall. 2 years ago, we had 900 inches at Alta or whatever. So it seems to be very cyclical. And obviously it's very important to water, but has anybody ever considered that maybe the United States or the world is not built to have 350 million people or 8+ billion people? And it's not so much that there's a drought, it's just your overconsumption.
I think on that note, I'll just touch on, you know, we try to emphasize the importance of conservation and efficiency first, using less, those upstream solutions. That's where we really see the value for businesses to be taking. And so, yeah, we mentioned drought, but we should just be using less in the first place. And that's really that education and awareness first approach driving the conservation and efficiency efforts we want to see at the community scale.
I'm scanning the crowd.
So I'm just thinking about Box Elder County and how you deal with what I guess would be the frustrations with that. With here are the efforts that people are putting into sustainability, and yet here comes this that washes it all away. How do you speak to clients and such, and how do you think about it yourself?
I think that's a really great question at a really hard time for all of us, because we will continue to do this work and we'll continue to show up for it, but it obviously is a huge blow. And I think that you probably feel the same. Like, we will just keep showing up, we'll keep doing the work. We tried really hard, like with some of the folks that I was working with on this, we tried really hard to think about, like, again, what are the right messages for the people who are going to be going to the protest? What are the messages that the commissioners can hear and respond to? So I think, you know, we continue to adjust the messaging to fit the situation we're in, and we keep showing up. And I don't know if you've been to any of the, like, Climate Week events or any of that kind of stuff, but when you go to something like Climate Week in New York and you see how many people are tackling these issues from so many different perspectives, even just, like, you know, learning from, you know, the two of you today is so inspiring. And then multiply that by, like, thousands. Like, there is a lot of important work being done that will continue to be done, with or without the setbacks we face.
Final call for questions. Okay, so I'm gonna close this out with one more question for each of you, just to bring the conversation, like, back to earth, super actionable for everyone in the room. So each of you, if someone in this room does just one thing differently in their business after today, what do you want it to be?
Start the conversation. It really just starts with someone at your business wanting to look at where are your gaps, where are your risks, where are some improvements that can be made. Quick plug for the Green Business Program. You can also start by creating a profile on our website. And those actions on the website can help drive that conversation and look at what are you missing across your operations, across your different divisions, but making sure that everyone's at the table. I know having a sustainability champion or a green team, that's great. We want to see those, but we also want to see sustainability integrated across your entire business. And so just starting the conversation with all the people that need to be at the table.
The one thing is to know who your audiences are, and learn what matters to them, and then create the messages that they will respond to. Start there.
Simple, contact us, join us, spread the word. We're here to help.
Great. All right, that's all we have today, folks. Enjoy lunch.